Welcome back to Exquisitely Aligned. I'm Gina Meyer-Vincent, the host and your personal soul shifter, here to help you define and design the future you desire and deserve, the one where essentially you become exactly what the world is missing. Today, I am excited to introduce you to Leanne DeSanto. She has dedicated her life to helping people push through hard things so they can become their best selves. She knows firsthand how life can throw a curveball from having a collapsed lung at a young age of 16 and to becoming widowed at age 36, again, young. She believes that resilience, perseverance, and discipline are skills that, if cultivated, can help you achieve anything. So there's more I can tell you, but I'm going to let it unfold as we go because I'm already excited. Leanne, thank you for being with me today. I am thrilled to see what we create together during this time because I feel we have many things in common as far as we see and feel life. I know you come from a fitness background the way I have as well. And so if you don't mind, start with what was it like to be 16? I can't even imagine, and having a collapsed lung.
Yeah, thank you, Gina. I'm really excited for our conversation today. I was a track athlete, so I was, you know, at practice, and I just felt this like pain.
Wow.
When I breathed in, I was like, oh, what's that? You know, you think it's cramp, you think it's, you know, whatever, right? I didn't think much about it, and maybe a day went by. I don't remember the whole thing, but I told my mom, and she's like, let's go to the emergency room. Let's go get checked out. So I went, and the doc said, yeah, looks like, you know, there's something there, but it should heal on its own. Don't worry about it. And then my mom worked for was an office manager for a psychiatrist at the time, and he said, that doesn't sound right. I take her to Boston. I grew up in Boston area, so we were in a smaller town, and he's like, go to a city hospital. So we went there, and they admitted me and said, wow. Yeah, your lung is collapsed. It's just called a spontaneous pneumothorax. It wasn't any
just I like the
poppins. I know, a long fancy name to say collapsed lung.
Oh my gosh. But the way you said just, it's just like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. So it was,
wow.
Yeah. So, it, you know, I had to have a chest tube inserted, reinflated. I was in the hospital for a couple of days and that was that. And then I wasn't able to practice with my team. We were going to like districts and all these big meets, and I couldn't be in the meet. And, I was actually a spectator at our district meet, and I felt the pain again. I was like,
oh gosh.
Weird. What's happening? I feel that sharp pain again. So when, you know, some girls told the coach, I wasn't even competing, and there's, you know, an ambulance on the field. So they put me in the ambulance. I'm like, oh gosh, I'm not even competing and I'm going in the ambulance, you know? And so brought me to the hospital, admitted me and had surgery. So had basically 7 cysts the size of golf balls removed off my left lung. It's just sometimes I guess you're born with, and sometimes they let go. So it becomes like a pinhole in your lung. So when you breathe, that air leaks between your lung and chest cavity and causes a lot of pressure and a lot of pain. So, yeah. So, you know, completely unexpected. But yeah, I had to deal with that when it was, I think, my sophomore year of high school. So
yeah, perfect world, right? I mean, for your mom, dad too, right? You don't ever expect. I mean, I know I had chest pains at that age too. And my mom would be like, you're breathing too. You drank through a straw, you inhaled air, you know, or you're growing so fast. I mean, I'm so thankful that someone whispered to your mom, yeah, no, I think I would go a little like investigate this further. And thank goodness the ambulance was there, but to have to go right into surgery at that age had to be completely frightening for you and everyone that loved you, you know?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What?
I know, it was so random and bizarre thing to happen, you know, but but I was under good care and, you know, everything was fine. And now when I get an x-ray, you can see these like staples because my lung is stapled to my chest. So it's like, people are like, you have a necklace. I was like, no, it's just my staples. It's all good.
I understand having a hip and shoulder replacement. Yeah, I have fun x-rays, fun looking and funny looking x-rays. I'll never forget the first time they showed me. I was like, ooh, you know, like I could have done without that information. Now that I'm walking freely, like I didn't need to see that because now I'm a little like, ooh, a nerve. But so at that age, with such a, I'm going to use the word traumatic, you know, like shocking, unplanned, especially I think when we're at 16 and you're athletic and all of a sudden, you know, you're not able to compete and now you're in surgery and now you're recovering. Like what, how did, or did, maybe I should ask, did it change how you saw and perceived and experienced the world around you? I mean, you're very young now, but it's almost like quickening the pace to becoming an adult is what I would think.
Yeah. I think so. You know, I think when you're younger, you just kind of roll with it, you know, but I you know, wanted to get back on the track. I wanted to just get back to life. I didn't want to dwell on it and make myself feel broken or different or,
right.
You know, so I just, you know, I think that was the start of just feeling that like sometimes things happen and we have to push through. Like sometimes unexpected things, and how do we, you know, push through those things and try to get stronger because of them. And that's, I think, started that kind of mindset for me.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine. I would definitely imagine. I think that we have the opportunity when things like that happen to say, are we going to just continue through living life the same way or let it open us up to another way of experiencing and understanding how our health can change our anything, our little world, you know, and I don't mean little that you weren't playing big, but at 16, your world is a little smaller. And back then, not to say our age, but back then we didn't have the internet. So it wasn't as,
far. Yeah, your little high school, your little town, your bubble, right? It's what you knew. So
yeah, exactly. Very different. Very and then becoming a widow, I luckily, fortunately, thanks to a woman my age, my blood type, who was also an organ donor, I didn't have that experience. But there were very many moments of not knowing if I would become a widow. And I'm trying to remember if I was about the same age. No, I was a little bit older. I think I was 39 when Mark received his life-saving transplant. But was that, how would I say, unexpected? Yes, it's unexpected. That's not a good question. Did he pass quickly or was it something he was struggling for a while and then passed? What did that look like and how did you prepare or did you have time?
There was no preparation. It was very sudden. We moved around the country with his job. We had just moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and, you know, bought a huge house and, you know, went through all that in March of 2000 and he passed in June. It was very sudden. He was in a meeting with a senior team. Luckily, he was in town. He traveled a lot. He was in Atlanta, downtown. I got a call from his HR director saying that, you know, that he collapsed, that they're working on him. He's being sent to Grady Hospital. Can you meet us down there? And he didn't feel well. You know, he would off and on for about a year. He was having headaches and different things, but he worked out and, you know, he just was like, I'm fine. Right. So, I was called down to the hospital. I went to the waiting room. You know, it was kind of his team was there. I didn't even know some of them. And they cleared the room and there was the chaplain was there. And I said, no offense, but what are you doing here? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, they always call me for a heart event. They're working on him now. And basically 10 minutes later, the doctor came in and said, sorry, you know, he never regained consciousness. So I was just in shock. You know, he was 45. I was 36. It was basically rule complications due to high blood pressure because he had an enlarged heart. So it wasn't a typical heart attack, but
okay.
Yeah. I guess that's why they call it the killer, right? It just,
yeah,
it just sent me in a complete whirlwind, of course, of just needing to manage things. I resold the house. We met in Atlanta and moved around, and then we were in California most recently and moved to Atlanta. So I wanted to get back to California. Anyway, just a lot of things happened around that. But just, the what now, the why, a lot of that. But I think, not sure if I, again, grieving is different for everyone, but I've just always been a, pick yourself up by your bootstraps and keep going person. So, okay, now what? And I think it's kind of interesting because when you do lose somebody, there's all of this whirlwind of things that have to happen, right? Planning the funeral, planning this. And we had, I brought him back to Connecticut to bury him where he grew up, but we had, services where his corporate office was, back in California where that office was. So there was multiple memorials, multiple things. So it does keep you quite busy at the beginning when you're
just in the
mode of, okay, I've got all these things I need to manage now. But then when that's all done, it's like, okay, wow, now what,
So what did you do in that now what transition? Because it's true. I think it also, so I'm not saying it's, so having taken care of Mark and having dinner with friends who, the dad just passed recently, and this, the mom cared for him for so many years. He had heart issues, a much older gentleman, different heart issues, different country. But she was struggling now because she's like, I raised three kids, then they were doing well. Then my husband became sick and I cared for him from then on. As those three kids moved out, then she became the caregiver to her husband. And now at this age, she's like, I'm like a little, like, what do I do with my time? But, and so you were talking about, you had a normal, happy life. You had probably a schedule. You had a brand new, amazing house, probably a dream home, I'm guessing. Yeah. And then it's like the carpet's pulled out from under you. And then, like you said, you're busy doing things in multiple states with multiple different groups of people who all adored you and he. And then what did you do with that? Like that, I want to say alone time, that quiet time.
Great question. I think it's a little bit of a, blank for some of it, but I think, our goal, he was in restaurants and I was in fitness at the time. I was a personal trainer and trained all over the country and worked in multiple gyms. And, we wanted to, once he stopped working at the corporate side of restaurants, our goal was to open, become a franchisee and open a couple restaurants for him and open a gym for me. So it was really our goal in the future. Mm-hmm. He was
just you had plans.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So when we, I felt most connected. I met him in Atlanta, but we had lived in Chicago. We moved to Dallas. We moved overseas to London, came back to Greenville, South Carolina, went to California, then moved back to Atlanta. So that was the whirlwind of buying, selling homes, him getting moved with his companies. And so I knew I wanted to be back in California. I felt the most connected. I had really good friends. So resold, the house, went back to California. And I really, in those conversations, I'm like, well, our dream was to do this. So I think I'm moving forward and look at, at the time I wanted just more of a boutique personal training gym. So I ended up, just buying an existing facility, remodeled it, and was able to run that for, 8 years. And so I just felt like I was kind of carrying on our dream, our
yes.
Do. So I think that just staying busy helps, but definitely quiet times of the, what would life look like now if that didn't happen in the 5 years, the 10 years that now he's been gone, 24 years in June. So crazy. Seems like yesterday, but So I think it's good to keep moving and good to keep, setting goals for yourself. I think if you just sit in it for too long. I mean, you need to give yourself time, right, that to do that,
but also
to then be able to have dreams and have something to work towards, I think is what really along faster. And I feel like it was a bit of an honoring of what we already had in motion, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Carrying it through, allowing him to see you glow in that realm, in that space. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And I think it's always important. I mean, we never know. I like to say they're curveballs, because I've had my own story with a hard and fast curveball myself that ended up in losing two joints. But but you know, there are curveballs in life, and how do we, I think we're not prepared for them, especially as a 16-year-old, healthy, thriving, young, fast, you know, athlete, et cetera. And then again, at, did you say 36 or did I write 32? 36, right? 36. So we have my sixes. So like two decades later, another big, so out of both of these, like what, besides what you've just said, is there another piece of advice that you would give besides continue on and keep moving, et cetera, to like, you know, for us with experience, exquisitely aligned, it's about being able to go inside and reconnect. Was there any part of those two that you found a part of yourself within the hell that you didn't even know you had? That you were like, wow, I really do have what it takes to, you know, whatever that was, make it through, persevere, to be resilient, to hone in and refine these gifts that I have. Was there any shockers that came out to light for you, or just little facets of the diamond within you that maybe you hadn't explored before?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, like what you said about, you know, the perseverance, the, okay, this happened, you know, I never really fell into, or the type of person that has a victim mentality, you know, I've been like, okay, one of my favorite sayings is, so what, now what? So what that happened to you, now what? Now, what are you going to grow and learn and do because of that? And I think for me, I also really, really tried to foster a lot of gratitude, you know, being so grateful for every experience that we go through, because it's all a teacher, you know, it's all a teacher. So like very grateful for the time I had with Craig. I mean, you know, I met him on a blind date and we married 10 months later and we're together, you know, married eight, but together, you know, almost 10 years. So, so again, it's such a gift to have that time. Right. I've had that time with him. And in terms of, you know, the high school experience, I'm not sure if I was mature enough to see it that way at the time. But now, you know, as I went through, I was like, okay, so I had this experience and I'm grateful for it. You know, so I think if you can shift it to yes, moving forward, not sitting and wallowing in, you know, the box too long, you know, but you know, understanding that, because it's all part of the human experience. You know, we live in a world, now that's, you know, if you're unhappy, take a drug. If you're, you know, we have it's like, no, we're meant to be sad. We're meant to be lonely. We're meant to, they're all part of who we are, you know, sort of bury it and to, you know, dumb it down with, you know, whatever, you know, millions of addictions out there.
Right.
It's just not going to move us to where we want to be. And that's, and I love what you do, Gina, because again, I'm all about that alignment too. You know, and when I coach my clients now, especially, you know, nothing erodes confidence like not keeping your word to yourself. Right. So it's keeping that word to yourself, actually following through, doing what you say you're going to do. So, you know, where where what you say, you know, what you think, what you say and what you do are all in alignment. That's harmony. That's a quote from Gandhi, but that is, you know, that's harmony. Right. That when you feel connected is when we're not in alignment, right? When we're not you know, we're saying we want to do this and we don't do it, then that just erodes that ability for us to even try, because, right? It's like setting those New Year's resolutions. Yeah, I know, but February, I'm eating chicken wings and drinking beer at the Super Bowl. Why even set the goal, you know?
Right.
You know, so.
And I think to speak to alignment, because I think sometimes people feel maybe they can't get the concept of what does it mean to align in all the ways that you just mentioned. And going back to our fitness backgrounds, right? That's an easy one to give somebody a visual. When you lift up a dumbbell, or when you're doing a push-up or a down dog, let's say, you want to be in alignment in your body so that you get the proper, you know, health benefits out of whatever it is you're doing, especially with yoga, because you're twisting and turning and using muscles to create this energetic sensation for each of those chakras, which are then, in Chinese medicine, all of those pressure points, etc., so that it boosts your digestion when you're in bow. You know, it legs up the wall, relaxes you and grounds you and puts you in that, in the here and the now, instead of what's next, you know, like on high alert. Right. And I think that when somebody passes away, somebody young passes away unexpectedly, or anyone passing away unexpectedly, or you going into surgery quickly, we get in that 911 mode, and then we can stay in high alert. Like, okay, what curveball is coming at me now? Able to, you know, like you said, go through the emotions, ride that roller coaster. I think that I love that you brought up that point, because when we feel the lows, then we can feel the highs, right? It's almost like when we take for granted our health and then we catch, I don't know, a head cold and we're all congested and we may go hoarse, lose our voice, or we're carrying around a box of tissues everywhere we go, you know, and then all of a sudden, the day we feel back to 100%, we're like, oh, I value this. Like, you know, it's where the days leading up to the cold, where you felt great, you just took it for granted. Like, yeah, I feel great every day.
Right. Yeah. It comes back to that appreciation and gratitude, right? Because we don't feel it until we're out of balance somehow. Then all of a sudden we're like, oh man, you know, and sometimes it's not maybe something, you know, we go about our day and we're busy and, you know, we might not always be cued into it, but even just taking a minute or two in the morning or at night and just realign with that, like, wow, you know, even if there's struggles, even if there's bills to be paid, even if our kids are struggling, even, you know, it's like, just, okay, how can I stay, you know, grounded in just gratitude for where I'm at, and all in, you know, the new thing, the new, you know, whatever you're looking for, you know, in life. So, as opposed to being, you know, knocked down by every little thing, you know, and that's just because we become what we think about. Like, we know that now, right? We become what's constantly in our thoughts and what is in our energy, that's what we're going to find more of, or what we're going to find evidence to, you know, what we make things mean in life, right?
We can
make it mean whatever. And if we make it mean something negative, or, oh, poor me, or I'm just stupid, or all these, you know, belief systems that are in, we're going to live with that. We're not going to be able to move past it. You know, there's a great term called anti-fragile, which I love. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's even more than just resilience. I love resilience too, about picking yourself up and being resilient, but, you know, anti-fragile is really, how do we get stronger and thrive in the stressor or in the chaos, in the volatility or whatever we're in? Like, how do we, you know, get stronger? And there's so much evidence in nature of that, right?
Yeah.
Like the butterfly, right? Mm-hmm. If you help the butterfly out of the cocoon, right? It would die. Through the fight to get out, that's where it gains its strength and its beauty as blood pumps into the wings. And, you know, so if you were to help it, it's not going to survive. But through that struggle, that's how they thrive and get and become a beautiful butterfly, right? So, and there's so many different examples in nature about that. And I think we're the same.
Definitely.
The more that we can, you know, skill set, right? Discipline's a skill set, perseverance. You know, it's not about it being, you know, great all the time. It's just recognizing, wow, now I have an opportunity to really, you know, exercise discipline, right? Now I have an opportunity ability to, I mean, you want more discipline, do things that require discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, you want more patience, well, do things that require patience, because mm-hmm. it's a skill set you need to learn and push through those things, right? So mm-hmm. that's, you know, I've been coaching people in different arenas for 30 years, and that has been the conversation, whether it's, you know, mindset coaching, whether it's body coaching, you know, physical coaching, mm-hmm. trainer, to now a cognitive specialist and working on cognitive skills for people. And how do we push through those hard things, you know? And that's yeah. what I do with brain training programs. But, you know, again, in every arena of our life, there's lessons and learnings. And so it's great, you know, be able to just shift the thoughts around that, if that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah. And I see it a little differently. So I would describe it just similar, but different. I think that instead of, you know, when you need more patience, because a lot of people do, I have myself, what I learned is different in the program that I teach is a little bit different way of thinking. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, if we're feeling very impatient, we're probably in the wrong place. And that could be in the wrong space, your physical space. It could be in the wrong work place. I've been there. I was a department store buyer, loved what I did a really, you know, did a beautiful job of what I did. But the energy, the environment, the politics, yeah. the backstabbing, mm-hmm. right, was toxic. Mm-hmm. And so, I couldn't stay there any longer. I had to get out. Sometimes it's the, like you were saying, the mindset of what we were maybe taught from a young age, from societal noise or norms, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But these belief systems that are really confining, or maybe we're in the wrong field. You know, yeah. I love doing purpose possibilities in Prosecco, where in 2 hours we enlighten people to see what are their gifts, because so often we're taught what we're not good at and what we need tutoring or essentially something else on. But to go back to your point about resilience, you know, we started this conversation today with very few words of, you know, you had written to me via email, hey, what about this? And I said, sure, great. But what you didn't know, Leanne, is I just finished an article that's published now on Facets of Resilience and A Diamond's Tale of Transformation, and how those times in our lives, that pressure of the collapsed lung, tragically losing your husband at a young age, him young, you young, and right on the cusp of like this new, like what I would say dream life from what you described about your house and where you were living, and the goals that you each shared and dreams and desires. But I do believe like we have to, or we have a choice. We don't have to do anything. So back it up. We live in a free will world, which is an yeah. amazing thing. And we get to decide, do we want to allow this to shape us, refine us, mm-hmm. you know, like that diamond with so many facets, or polish it up or whatever? Or do we want to just stay in the darkness of coal, being in the pressure of the earth, you know? Mm-hmm. So I love that you had mentioned that. That's awesome. So tell us from there, because I know you're not that the gym is no longer your business. I know that you work with mindset, and I love that. So if you don't mind, share with us where you are today here in California, one of my neighbors, not yeah. next door, but that would be fun, but close enough.
Close enough, exactly. Yeah, so I did the personal training. Like I said, I'd been some type of coach for 30 years, and from fitness went more into mindset, business, you know, that type of coaching. And then got involved with a company called Learning RX, and came in just kind of as a consultant to the owner. Her name's Noha. She's amazing. We met, we really hit it off. And so just working, you know, with her, and Learning RX does what's called cognitive brain training. So I was fascinated. I've always been in mind-body connection, and again, yeah. you know, how we push through hard things. And oftentimes cognitive skills are linked not only to, you know, academics and doing well that way, but also life skills. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with the company and now I'm the director of the company. That was 4 years ago, but I just saw all the things we've been talking about really is what I see in our brain training programs, because we are working on things that our clients cannot do, right? They're weaker skills for them. They're either struggling, you know, they're students that are struggling in school, or we have seniors that come to us. So really all ages. And we, through our assessment, can see, okay, this is why you're seeing what you're seeing. And oftentimes when there's gaps between this cognitive skills, a lot of behavior things can come up, because, you know, we all find a way to cope, right? We have to cope with what scares us and what we don't want to do. And, you know, so that really, you know, informs the adult client or the parent, like, oh, that's why I'm seeing what I'm seeing. That's why they're melting down during homework. That's why they're zoning out. That's why they're resistant.
They're exhausted. Yeah, you know, like it's like learning a Greek, you know, if you're English speaking and all of a sudden you have,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now with, you know, brain training, which is like going to the gym for your brain. So totally connected. You know, we use fun brain game type procedures to build the skills. So, and that way then, you know, you can learn easier, you can think faster, you can perform better, behavior, ways of being changed, like so many things.
Confidence, right? And yeah, so, that's empowered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, resilience, all of that. I can't tell you how many, especially kids come to us that are paralyzed by making a mistake. And I was like, this is brain training. Like, if you're not making a mistake, we're not doing our job. We're working on things you cannot do, things that are really hard. But so the downstream or transfer effect of what we do is all of those things where now they're willing to, you know, to push through hard things. Now they have more confidence and understand, okay, that's hard, but I can do it. I can find a way through instead of just shutting down. You know, I think, unfortunately, this immediate gratification world is not teaching those skills, you know. It's just, I just pick up my phone and get any information I want. You know, in our day, we had to, you know, look at encyclopedias and go to libraries and like sweat for it a little bit, you know? So.
Yeah. And I love that you were talking about making mistakes. I think that so many people fear a mistake, and having raised two children, and I've shared this on the show before, a friend of mine is the heir to a mistake. And the mistake was, I think it was great grandma wanted chalk that didn't leave dust on her hand or everywhere. And the husband was in the petroleum business. He created something. She put it on the chalkboard. It didn't come off. The Crayola crayon. So mistakes can be really just something else that was meant to be created, enjoyed, loved by kids around the world and adults. You know, I think everyone smiles when they, or most people smile when they pick up a Crayola crayon and put it to whatever coloring book or a sheet of paper. You know, it's old fashioned fun. And so I think Darcy Rogers, who Leanne, you also know with Organic World Language, she was explaining how they encourage these students. She was on episode 70, if you haven't listened to it. And then one of these upcoming episodes, I don't know which number, but we just filmed yesterday, where she was talking about how they encourage the kids to be, to A, they first create a safe space, and then allow the kids to make mistakes without judgment, judgment from others. And then we have oftentimes the internal judgment of ourselves, that fear of I can't, you know, not perform in the way, shape, or I've got to create the perfect chalk that doesn't leave dust. Right.
I love that. That's and you know what? There is no innovation without mistakes.
Right.
Nothing's been invented the first time, you know. It's like, oh, I got it right the first time. No, it didn't take Edison like 100 times to get the light bulb right. It takes, there's no innovation without that. So being able to you know, help kids understand that, you know, we're in, and again, not only in a world of just, you know, trying to dumb down our emotions with all these other things. It's also all these labels, you know, we don't diagnose, we don't label. I don't even buy into that label. I have so many parents that come to me like, oh, ADHD or dyslexia or this or that, or, you know, so many buckets. And kids already know when they're not up with their peers. They already feel it.
And yeah, of course.
Get it and I can't. How come that's easy for them and I can't do it? It already sets up that belief system. And that's where I go back to the, so what, now what? Okay, so what, you have dyslexia. We're going to turn that around for you. We're going to build the skills so you'll be able to read and you know, and figure out your world and be okay with that. You know, so what, you have ADHD. So, I mean, again, I think that's a big bucket term for a lot of things. You know, we, you know, there's a clinical term now called digital dementia from this, you know, from us. You know, that's affecting a lot of us. And that's cognitive decline and memory loss due to too much time on technology. So there's so many things that are happening now, whether it's a diagnosis or not, we don't care. We just want to, you know, elevate the skills, look at the, you know, the gaps, close those gaps and be able to change people's lives. So that's what I've always loved to do, you know, in different arenas. And so I'm super excited to be able to do it with Learning RX now and to see the before and afters, to see the from kids that come in on the spectrum that can't even look you in the eye, that are so afraid, that are being bullied, that, you know, just all these things, to leaving with their head held high and, you know, advocating for themselves and being able to handle their world. And so it's, we've just seen just remarkable shifts. And And that's, that's what it's about. And I know that's what you're about too. So,
I think that when we can empower people to stand in their power, and I don't see power as masculine, I see it as beautiful. And it's when somebody knows their truths, and it's not about the labels, it's not about diplomas and degrees, it's not about, you know, all these things that, you know, we put on different hats, we say, et cetera. It's more about, you know, what you're doing and experiencing that day. And I think, like you mentioned about the cell phones, I mean, we're connected, but we're really truly disconnected. It's that lack of conversation. So I'm keeping an eye on the clock. And Leanne, it's time to have a different conversation with our opening to possibilities conversation cards. So let me just do one more quick shuffle. I shuffled them before I got on, but let's do it one more time. I'm going to rifle through the cards. You're going to tell me when to stop. At that point, I'll read the card. There's a word, then a statement, and then three questions. You can answer one, two, or all three. So tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Oh, perfect. Advice. Ooh. Advice. Yes. Advice is abundant, even in unexpected places. How do you discern which advice to act on? Has someone else's advice changed your life? What is your favorite piece of advice to give? You can do one, two, or all three, and I can reread if you need as well.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm a lifelong learner, so I'm a big, you know, from books to podcasts to YouTube videos to, you know, and everything in between. So I think I've taken in a lot of people's advice. I really have, you know, learned, shifted my perspective, you know, been able to grow my own, you know, myself internally as I help my clients as well. So always been open to advice and to feedback and to, you know, hey, look at it a different way. What do you think about this? And I'm not sure about that, you know. So I think for me, that's just, again, as a lifelong learner, I just suck it all up. I love it, you know. in terms of the best advice, what was the question? The best advice I give?
Yeah. Has anyone else's advice changed your life, or what is your favorite piece of advice to give?
Oh boy, so many. you know, I always say to my daughter, you know, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Everything's going to work out. Yeah. Might not always be the exact way. And another is, you know, everything you need is already inside of you. Mm-hmm. It's there, you know, and just trust it, and you're going to learn, and you're going to shift, and you're going to adjust. But, you know, follow your head, your heart, and your gut. That's what mm-hmm. you have. You know, mm-hmm. follow that and learn and be grateful. And so what, now what? You know, like all of that together. Because, you know, growth is a huge human need, right? The need to be able to grow. And I think when we stop growing or think we know it all, right? Or, you know, that's when, you know, we just stagnate. So to be open to that, to keep learning and growing is, you know, has always worked for me. And I think that's good advice.
Yeah. I love it. So thank you so much for being with me today and sharing some not so comfortable times with us so transparently, what it felt like, what the journey looked like, etc. I greatly appreciate it and had so much fun with you. So thank you, Leanne, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd love to also offer your listeners just a 50% off of our assessment. Anyone that's interested. Yeah. And feel free to put my cell phone number in the show notes, the director of the center, so you can call me directly. And, you know, we can set that up, but I'd love to offer that to your listeners. So,
okay, perfect. Awesome. That's wonderful. Do they need a code or just when they call you, the podcast?
Mention the podcast. That'd be wonderful. Perfect.
Awesome. So. That's great. Thank you. Thank you for that generous offer. We greatly appreciate it. So, and so if you're struggling with anything where you feel like you're that diamond, being pressured by whatever it is, outside sources, life-changing events where the rug has been pulled out from under you, or you just see something greater for yourself, let me know. Reach out to Gina@exquisitelyaligned.com. Also in the show notes, love to set up a discovery call and see if there is something I can help you with. Till next time, be exquisite.